This is Rainbow Six Radio, bringing you
the Next Generation Podcast for talk, news, and information for all things Rainbow Six.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Rainbow Six Radio. This will be episode 11, and we are going to be talking about all kinds of things today. But it is a little bit of an off week just because, Captain, what do you think? It just seems like there's not a whole lot of like breaking news and information going on right now.
Yeah, not really. I mean, what was it? Last week, a patch just came out. So I kind of feel like, it's a little bit of downtime for everyone right now.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, today we're going to be going over a few things. We do have a new nerf that was added to the game since our last discussion on nerfs, and we'll be exploring that a little bit. We'll also be talking about the Lost Polish season map and, maybe maps that would be coming up for rework next year and why. Going over some memorable plays, Q&As, and pro tips. So even though there's not a whole lot of breaking news and information, there's still stuff to talk about in the game that relates to kind of what is going on. So with that, Captain, why don't you start us off?
Yeah, for sure. So the new nerf, Goyo, he is actually going from 3 shields to 2 shields for Pro League utility. So this is, this come to a shock a little bit for me. I didn't think that he needed a nerf so quickly or especially dropping down from 3 to 2, but do you think that his shields, since he's only getting 2 now, do you think they should be buffed? Or like maybe even like the flame is a longer lasting or like a wider AoE or something?
Well, so, I mean, first let's get into the reason why, right? Mm-hmm. They posted that they were wanting to do this in response to Pro League feedback, and they acknowledged that on their their win delta charts, that this isn't necessarily a problem in ranked play, right, but in Pro League level play, it is. And they're aware of that. They're acknowledging that. The developers are upfront that this is a Pro League level balanced change.
Mm-hmm.
The reason for it is that Pro League says that there's a lot of defender utility and that he brings with his 3 shields just one more thing for the defenders to have to clear. So, you know, you've got the deployable bulletproof cameras and maestro turrets and the deployable shields that Goyo has 3 of, plus other operators can have other ones and frost traps and barbed wires. And there's just a lot of crap for the attackers to have to deal with. So this change has been made for that reason. And so, like, I get it in some ways, and yet I kind of don't. Just because I feel like it's a valid concern, right? That there's like a lot of stuff that needs to be cleared out on defense by attackers. So a few things I think in response to that is, I don't know that removing 1 shield from 1 operator is going to solve that problem. I also don't know that it's, for instance, I think the reason that a lot of that stuff was introduced in the first place is that the attacking rush meta became so strong that they kind of wanted to slow it down and counter it. And I think by removing 1 defender's shield, I don't know that that is going to get around the problem of defenders having too much utility now. But one could argue it's a step. Right.
Sure. So, but then what about Frost having 3 frost mats or, you know, Womai having 7 of his gadgets or, you know,
Legion he gets 5. But yeah, I know what you mean.
He has 5?
Yeah. But I know what you mean. There's so many other defenders and it's like, okay, well, why Goyo, especially considering that they acknowledge that Goyo is only affecting the Pro League level and that they're saying that they don't see Goyo as overpicked or a problem in ranked. In fact, he's underpicked in ranked. So a change that is only hitting Pro League only with this 1 operator. And if the point is to reduce defender utility that attackers have to clear, again, 1 operator on 1 shield, I just don't know.
And aren't they also, I mean, we talked about this last episode, they're nerfing his shotgun. So,
so he's got a double nerf, essentially.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
But, okay, so I guess, you know, here's some thoughts I have on that is, I think it's a valid point. Defenders have a lot of utility to be cleared, but rather than picking one operator and taking away one of his utilities, and again, you're not really addressing all the other defender utility that's out there by doing that, maybe it's time to introduce a new operator that will more directly affect gadget clearing. So, you know, we've got kind of Ash and Zofia sort of for that already. And in other ways, like Maverick and Sledge can clear utility in their own ways, although either of them clearing a Goyo shield will wind up in a bad day for them. But so there's already some defenders that are good at clearing utility. So maybe it's time to introduce another one, or maybe it's a utility clearing gadget more on the level of Twitch, where it's something that's like specifically anti-gadget, not necessarily anti-personnel. You know, I don't know. I think that maybe just solving the problem would be better affected. And maybe this is just a short-term patch, because like it takes a while to develop a new operator and address, you know, something. But I don't know. Those are kind of some of the things I think on it.
Yeah, for sure.
As far as what you were asking about, should the shields be buffed if he's only going to have two of them? So let's think about what that means a little bit. So when the shield blows up, you're creating a area of effect of area denial, right? Like Capitos, fire bolts, or smokes, gas.
Yeah.
So if it lasts longer, even though he has less of them, less utility, two instead of three, it would do its job for a longer period of time, which would be arguably a decent buff for that character. I don't know. I feel like that would be not too bad of a thing to explore. What do you think?
I think that would at least create a balance, because I definitely understand having three shields to create like entry denial can be a little excessive, especially, you know, if they're attacking a room like barbecue where there's only two doorways in. So doing something like that, it makes sense that they might be, you know, trying to reduce that by making it down to two, but then like the fire doesn't last that long. So it to me it makes sense to at least try to do something that creates some sort of balance, to instead of just giving them a complete buff, kind of just like repolishing.
Right. Well, and I think what you said is important too, because his shotgun had also the TCSG 12 has just been nerfed by 30 points of damage from 84 down to 55, which will come out in the next patch. So like if he's already getting that and then you're taking a shield away too, I think like the double nerf almost makes it like worth a look.
Yeah. I agree. I think actually it would be kind of cool to see, and if this was something that was a thing, well, actually, I don't know how this would work. Like having remote detonation for his shields, because there isn't necessarily a way that you can pick which shield that you wanted to detonate, you know. Or at least they haven't come out with a game plan for that yet for any sort of operator. I mean, you have obviously the nitro cell, but you don't have multiple nitro cells. And smoke, you know, he can throw out three smoke grenades, but he has to detonate the first one before he can throw out the second one and stuff like that. So I don't know, maybe re-looking into something like that could be interesting, I guess.
Well, you know, that's one thing that I've definitely heard mentioned is, you know, looking at ways where you can maybe do something a little different with his shield than has been done so far. He does have both impact grenades and nitro cells. So if he did have that nitro cell planted on a shield, he could kind of remote detonate a shield already, sort of. It does have,
but
that
they would also hear that.
Right.
You know, which
that's just what I was about to say is it there's that sound giveaway on it. And then that only gives him the ability to do one, not two. Plus, if you, like, say you placed it on a door to the west and you think that's the door they're coming from, and all of a sudden they rotate around to the door on the north, and you're like, oh, you know, now I can't detonate the one I was going to anymore. Like, you're sort of committed to it once you've thrown it out.
Yep.
So he can sort of remote detonate his own shield in a way, kind of, but it's not an exactly adaptable situation.
Right.
You know, when things change. A proposed buff that I had heard that I think is worthy of consideration and I feel would be a buff that would not be game breaking or unbalancing is, I've heard it suggested, what if he gets a marker on his shield like Goyo's mines did? Where when the mine went off, the icon would disappear and then Legion would know, oh, that was the one, right? And they've since changed the way his icons work a little bit. They had they nerfed them. But what if we did something like that for Goyo's shield, where he had a shield icon on his screen for each placed one, and then if he's hiding behind that, you know, that crate or the bed or the desk or the whatever, you know, he can see both of his shields and he knows which one went off. Now, you can already kind of hear that through sound on your headset anyway, like, oh, that sounded like it was on the left or on the right or whatever. But this would just be something that would sort of help. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I mean, I think that would be okay. You know, obviously there are people that don't use headsets when they play.
Yeah, sometimes they'll have like the stock one-ear headset that comes with the...
Yeah. But then at the same time, I'm not sure if those people are actually like playing Pro League or anything like that.
No, definitely not.
But I mean, it definitely, that would be a decent polish. I'm not sure if that's my favorite, but I don't really have a favorite on this one because I don't know.
One that I think would be interesting, and it would essentially be considered an operator rework rather than a rebalance. But first of all, let me say that when Goyo was originally announced, and I heard what his gadget was, it was like a deployable shield that would detonate, right? I was like, oh, okay, that's cool. I assumed that, you know, because all defenders that had deployable shields got one deployable shield, that he would just have one of those. And then he had three deployable shields. I was like, whoa, that's a lot. So, you know, we're kind of talking about the utility again. But Ubisoft said initially when they released the operator and how they were taking a look at making Goyo, that they had this idea of like these fire canisters that you could detonate and they could be sort of like placed wherever you wanted them instead of it being on a deployable shield only. And they said that the problem they had with that was that it was discovered that players felt like they would lose track of where they were. Like, right. They'd be like, oh, where'd I put that gas can again to blow it up? I can't find it quick enough. Crap, my moment's over. I couldn't do it. And by putting it on a deployable shield, it was like a thing they couldn't miss.
Right.
You know, it was like, oh, okay, clearly it's in this position. What if they re-explored that idea? And what if they combined it with what I was just talking about the gas cans having an icon like the Legion mines do, where it's like, okay, you know, we'll get around. So we explored this when we first tried to create the operator. The players couldn't find the gas cans in a pinch when they needed to because they forgot where they placed them. And so with the icon there, that would resolve that problem. And then you retain the ability for him to still have maybe three of these things.
Yeah.
But now you've also gotten around the problem that offense has, because their whole thing is we need to clear utility. There's a shield. We want to clear it. Well, if you can place this on anything, then you don't necessarily have the needing to clear a physical object utility. I mean, the gas can is still a physical object or whatever. But, you know, if you like run through a door fast enough, it's still pretty easy to not be affected by that. Like you can run past it almost before it blows up and catches you.
Right.
You know, especially if you're a three-speed operator or something. But that would give more utility to Goyo while taking away from the problem of Defender having too much pre-placed, like, hard points of utility.
Yeah.
What do you think about something like that?
I actually really like that. And then maybe give him as, like, a secondary gadget, like an actual, like, deployable shield, and he could just put the gas canister, like, on the bottom of it instead of attaching it to it.
Right.
Yeah, I think that'd be really awesome, actually, because that, instead of just, I mean, obviously it'd still be, like, an entry denial sort of system, but you could also use those better in choke points, even also in objective, like, you know, I'm just imagining someone either planting or trying to secure area or something, and they're next to like a bed or something, and they don't actually see the gas canister, and all you do is just shoot it, and then, you know, that stops that plant.
Right.
I think that'd be really cool. I'd be into that for sure.
And you could still, as you were saying, you could still totally use it the way it is now. If you want to throw it on the back of a deployable shield, you can.
Yeah.
But you have to place a deployable shield first, and it would just be a normal one.
Yep.
You know, or you could place it on the backside of a wooden barricade, and as soon as they punch a hole in the wooden barricade, like I would say, you know, like you can go ahead and shoot it and it'll blow up the door. But if they break the door without puncturing the gas canister, maybe the gas canister just falls to the floor. It can still be shot, yeah, but it just falls to the floor. Unless their melee happens to intersect the gas can, then maybe it could detonate, which would be funny. But, you know, just things like that of like sort of like pre-placing it in areas where it can be used in that regard. And they said they tried it, you know, in development. They were like, that was their original concept. But they stepped away from it because players could never remember where it was. So then if you paired it up with that Legion mind tracking system, I think you have maybe a best of both worlds while solving the Defender you having too much utility problem. And it's still a utility in that it's a gadget, but it's not like a physical obstruction, like a shield that needs to be cleared.
Right.
So
question then, in this operator, like hypothetical operator rework, I guess no, because IQ can't really see Goyo shields, can she?
No.
Because there's no, like, electronics in it.
No.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'd be into that.
Well, and I suppose, now this is the other side of the coin, though, right, is that if you're on offense and you're looking at these shields, the shield at least lets you know where the trap is, because you were just saying, like, well, IQ, you know, like, I get where you were going with that. Like, if she could detect it or something, and she can't, but if she could. So if you just have these pre-placed gas cans wherever you want them, how does offense know where they are?
Because Ping 2.0, friend. Ping 2.0.
Ping 2.0, for sure. But like with nitro cells, you have the red light and the beeping sound. With smokes gas grenades, that can be a pre-placed trap. They emit a little bit of a sound, and they have the blinking light too. And so this is not like an electronic device, so it doesn't emit anything, sound or light or otherwise. So that brings...
I mean, neither of those cap cans traps.
Yeah, they don't anymore. They did when he was first made.
They used to. I think an easy way to get by that is, you know, obviously because, you know, you've mowed a lawn before, but, you know, when you are filling your lawnmower with gas, with a gas can, and you kind of hear that swishing back and forth of the gasoline.
Right.
You could just, you know, you place that down and it just has kind of that low sound.
But if it's not swinging on the end of a rope or something, why would it be swishing back and forth?
I'm just trying to create a balance, man. I don't know.
I mean, I don't mean to poke holes in the idea. I was just...
Captain, you're an idiot.
Or what if... Okay, hold on. Now I'm kind of rolling with your gas can analogy here. What if within, say, 2 meters, there was a very faint... So think of like smokes gas canisters when they detonate and they have the yellow cloud of gas.
Yeah.
What if there was a very faint and obviously way smaller, like little like brown fume cloud that's a visual identifier? So and if you're like further than like 2 meters away, you're probably not going to see it. It's going to be way more transparent than smokes gas canisters, which are fairly opaque. You can see through them, but they're pretty obscuring. But this would at least be some kind of a visual identifier.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the fumes escaping into the air, you know, and once you get close, you can see them kind of a thing. Maybe that could be a balancing, because you'd have to have some kind of way of offense to be aware rather than it just being a completely silent trap that they have no way of knowing about.
Yep. Yep. I agree. Or even like kind of along the same lines of that, but like maybe the few. Well, no, because that would actually your idea is better. Yep.
So interesting ways to think about Goyo. Regardless of how you think about him, he is getting a nerf. So he will be going from 3 shields down to 2. And again, this is balanced around Pro League, and they've acknowledged that it doesn't really have the same reflected data they see in ranked. One way or the other, this is happening. Just some ideas to sort of kick around, just in case anybody interested in the Ubisoft dev team happens to listen or not. But I have something that if the Ubisoft dev team is listening that I would love for them to explore. And that is the Lost Polish Season map that got dumped for Operation Health. So we know that they haven't done any new maps for this year, right? And we don't know what their game plan is for next year, but we know that they're going down to one operator per season and they're focusing on core gameplay mechanics. So it stands to reason that they may not even bring in a brand new map next year because, again, they're refocusing their efforts rather than on creating a new map from scratch to just doing the reworks, for that core gameplay period. And maybe by the time we get to year eight, once year seven is over, year seven, once year six is over, that they will maybe go back to two operators a season and new maps and whatever. But in the meantime, I would love to recommend that they find that hard drive that was sitting on a shelf since year two, where we would have had that Polish season map. And that would have been the season where we would have gotten, what would that have been? Ella and Sophia.
Yep.
But instead, what they did because of Operation Health was they released Ella with Ying and Legion, and then Sophia with, it was Vigil and Dokubi, I believe, right?
Yep, I think so.
I think that was. So they wound up doing two seasons of three operators. And basically, we lost the Polish season for Operation Health. And yet, there was a map that was in development up until a certain point when Operation Health was released. And it's not referred to often, but when it is, people will sometimes refer to the Polish map being the lost map. Because, like I said, it was in development at some point. It got certain amount of progress done on it before it was just never touched again. So I would love to see Ubisoft find that hard drive that contains that map from year two, dust it off, finish it up, and put it out there maybe for next year. What do you think?
I 100% support that decision. In fact, maybe we need to start a new petition.
There you go.
Start a Reddit petition to bring back the lost map.
So what do you think? I mean, we have no way of knowing, but right. What do you think that map might have been?
See, I mean, I think you would know better than I would.
I don't have any information. Nothing got leaked, but I mean, what would you like to it have been or whatever?
I have no idea, man.
Because in year two, we got the Spanish map. Right. Yep. We got coastline. And then we had two Asian themed maps between theme park and tower. So it felt like there was a lot of Asian maps that year because then there was also skyscraper in the mix.
Right.
From the first season. So it just for me, I was really looking forward to having something that was going to be a little different. I felt like that year really could have used it with having three different Asian style maps in a somewhat short amount of time.
I agree. I mean, I could see them doing like some sort of Polish castle, but then the fortress is already kind of a castle.
Yeah.
In a way, but
you know, I was looking forward to something setting kind of more of that Northern European climate. It's not, I feel like it's not an environment that's been explored in a lot of maps.
Yeah.
As far as like having, you know, more of a, pine trees and cooler climate, sort of a thing. Everything feels like warm and Mediterranean or deserty or Asian or whatever. I just feel like that's a climate that hasn't been explored a whole lot in maps. And I was so looking forward to it.
Yeah.
I didn't even almost care what the map is so much, but I would like to see some kind of just a, I don't know, maybe sort of an everyday-ish sort of an environment, whether it's a, you know, I don't know, a medical facility or a factory or a, a
Polish butchery for Polish sausage.
Yeah, I don't know what it would be. But, you know, I just think it would be something that would be cool to be brought back. And I feel like because they want to spend next year focusing on having the core gameplay elements taken a look at, therefore reducing the amount of new operators they're coming out with and probably sticking to the rework structure, this might allow them a path to give us a new, you know, quote, new map that they had already had in development and just never finished and brought to light.
Yeah, for sure. I hear that. Next year, if you had the option, what maps would you choose to rework and why would you choose to rework them?
Oh, man. So let me think about a few favorite maps. I like smaller maps because they bring about more intense firefights. And it feels like just things are a little bit more CQB in nature. So shotguns and smaller SMGs like the MP5K and whatnot become a little bit more viable rather than these long maze-like corridors that some of the more recent maps have brought in. So I would like to see reworks for some of the smaller maps like Plain or Favela, which granted aren't Pro League level maps, but they did their first casual rework this year for House.
Yes.
And I think that Plain, although it's not a Pro League level map, is just a lot of fun.
Plain is so fun.
It is. It is a lot of fun. And the biggest problem with Plain, of course, is the spawn peak runouts.
Yep.
And finding a way to deal with that, whether that's adding more stuff to hide behind, whether that's maybe the plane isn't on landing gear. Maybe the plane crashed. And so it's it doesn't have that extra height with the landing gear. So therefore, there's not the stairs to have to go up. And so you can get up into it quicker. Or maybe it's that the plane is up at the terminal gate. And so you can, you know, at least one of the entrance ways can be gotten on that way. You know, maybe there's they put a hatch on the top of the plane. Well, there's already one in the tail section, but maybe that's a place where you can start is up on top of the plane to drop down to get away from that. You know, there could be some things that could be explored. But you know, like with the terminal gate too, even if it was at the terminal gate and they had that extendable bridge, like I guess that could just become its own choke point for spawn peeking. But I don't know, just, you know, I think there's some things that can be explored with that. I also think that there's some things with Plain that could be a little bit more could be taken a look at as far as its layout. Like I know down in the basement Plain in the lower level of the plane where the luggage area is, there's that room. So you have your main luggage compartment and then there's like that little side room that oddly has a hanging like animal head in it.
Oh, yeah.
But across from that hall, there could have been another room there.
For sure.
And if you look at the map, like where the hall is, there's just like this empty space that goes unused. And so that would be between the large cargo compartment and the main luggage compartment. And then in that connecting hallway, again, you've got that one room off to one side, but there could have been a room off to that other side there that would have been a little smaller, but there could be one there. And it's weird because they made use of similar space in front of luggage room where there's, I don't know what you call that exactly. There's like that secret passage behind the double wall breach.
Yep.
You know, and so there's space like that that could have been used in that area and it just wasn't.
Wasn't used, yeah.
And I feel like something more interesting could be done with the upper deck. It's just kind of a long walkway and they sort of put like a wall in there to just make it something you have to go around so it's not completely straight line of sight. But I feel like something could be maybe added up there and something done up there. And then I feel like some of the long hallways, I'm especially thinking maybe about the one outside of Presidential, not meeting room, what's the other, the one in the middle of the plane, the master bedroom.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That long hallway, I feel like something could be added in there to just sort of break up that long run. Because that's kind of a brutal length of open area to look down. So Plain is one I would definitely look at.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Favela would be another one. I just think that Yellow Tower with grow room and packaging room and such could really – it just needs something done to it. That room is too small. There's too many exposed walls that can be breached. Yeah. I feel like if it had an exterior stairwell – well, not exterior, but like another stairwell – that sat on the outside, and maybe it was all covered, you know, as an interior one, but it just was positioned on the outside with walls or whatever, as a second way out of that room rather than just the hatch, would be useful. I think there's a lot of spots in that map where they just need to put some non-breachable walls onto some of the objectives. There's just too many breachable walls in some of those areas.
It's all wood and concrete.
Yeah. So I feel like there's definitely some things that they can do to take care of both of those smaller maps. What about you?
Yeah, I agree with both of yours. I like what you're saying. Now this is going to sound crazy.
Call you maybe.
Because, yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. it's not Friday, but just kidding. I think they should rework Bartlett University and bring it back. And people that play with me on the regular know that I hate Bartlett University with a passion, but I feel like reworking that could solve some of the problems.
What would you do?
Problem number one. There are like two ways to get into that building. So making it more breachable. So opening up, a lot of the windows are like, just have the metal over them. So like making some of those more like entryway windows, I think that would be a good start. Getting rid of the double section, like bomb sites and like secure area. I don't think you should be able to be on the top floor and secure like the library.
Oh, library. Like that. Yeah. That whole open area above it. That's, I don't like library very much for that reason.
I feel like, and I mean, obviously I know they're trying to make it look like Bartlett University or whatever. Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on, the university has one classroom.
Well, I was going to say, too. Yes, you're right. But, like, maybe reworking it to a way where, like, oh, you know, if actual terrorists or something came in, how would they defend this? They wouldn't just leave those walkways wide open and the balconies and stuff. They'd probably put stuff to kind of barricade along the edge. So maybe like flipped over desks or something, so it's not so open.
Well, they already do that in some areas. I want to say down in the, what's that front room in front of library, lower level. Yeah. I forget the name of that room, but it's below the classroom. And that is a flipped over table.
Yeah, that's true.
And there's rooms that have some bookshelves that are pulled out at 90 degrees from the wall. So you can use those as cover points. I want to say the room, across from trophy room, and there's often a hostage in there. It's in the front of the building on the second floor. I forget the name of that room too, but like that's got some desks and some bookshelves and some things that are turned sideways to hide behind and stuff. So for cover points, for me, the big problem with Bartlett is, as you mentioned, library, having that double height room with that open atrium area in the middle there to look down on. Yep. It's a tricky one to deal with. I would prefer if that wasn't split level like that. And like you said, having another way in, there's only one door on the front.
Yep.
And there's that back, I don't know, it's like a cafeteria area. It's off the kitchen. It's that square room that has the sunlight entrance or a skylight entrance.
Yep.
And it's got that garage door thing that looks exactly like the garage door on the backside of Cafe, which you can shoot through. You can breach it.
Yep.
But on Bartlett, you can't.
It's metal. Yeah.
Like that just seems to me like it would be like an obvious one to like, if you want to reinforce it, you can reinforce it. And if you want to, you know, hit it with a buckshot gun or whatever, you know, to breach it, you can. Like that would seem kind of obvious to me. I don't know. But a second door in there would be good.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, cause I know certain people enjoy that map and whatever, but I hated it, but I feel like it could get new life if they opened it up a little bit more.
And here's the thing. It had some problems, but they removed it from even casual and it for like what, 2 years now or something like that.
Yep.
And I'm sorry, that map wasn't perfect, but it was nowhere near as ungainly as Tower.
Right.
Like I would rather play Bartlett than Tower any day of the week, but
I agree. And the other one that, and I don't necessarily feel like it needs a huge rework, but I've said this many a times that I feel like Chalet could use some extra.
Well, we're getting a Chalet rework. I want to say it's season 3 of this year.
Right. That's true.
Chalet and Skyscraper after House.
Right. Well, never mind then. They all in the future, they already heard what I was going to say and they're hopefully doing it. We'll see.
Nice.
I'll come back to you on that one.
Nice. I would say Tower would be another one I would love to see reworked. But for me, Tower would need to be like blown up to its roots and completely like you can't even recognize this map anymore. Kind of a rework.
Yep.
Like I just there's very little about that map that I enjoy. You know, I like the restaurant is all right. You know, tea room or whatever is OK. You know, some of that stuff is all right. But like the way that they have the hallways and that whole surrounding outer perimeter with those like white vertical artistic structure things or whatever, like all that just it's just so bad. So I would like to see Tower reworked, but I think it would almost need to be like from scratch pretty much.
I think it would just in general, it would be kind of cool to take the maze likeness out of some of the maps and rework that a little bit. Like, so new theme park, I feel like they could fix that a little bit more, make that a little less confusing.
But you remember when theme park first came out and everybody was like, it's so big, it's such a maze, I don't even know where I am. And like, I don't know. I felt like with time, I've definitely gotten used to it.
It was
fine. But, you know, you do bring up the point, though, that a lot of the maps do have that maze like structure with the long corridors and the box rooms and the buffer rooms. And, you know, so I don't know. It's kind of what Pro League likes, you know, for double bomb sites and having room to roam and rotations. And,
right.
You know, but then it also creates situations where it's like you can go a whole match without seeing anybody if you're roaming off site and they come from the opposite direction. And so.
Yep.
So as we're just kind of, you know, looking to what's going on, you know, in the game and what we would like to see, I thought it might be nice to also discuss maybe what some of our most memorable plays are, because not only is that sort of an interesting thing for the viewers to hear, but it also kind of helps them get to know us a little bit.
Yeah.
And so I definitely know one of Dan's most memorable plays. Definitely. To this day, I still love it. I'll let you fill in on this one.
So if I'm correct, I think you're talking about that beautiful moment where we were defending on Skyscraper.
Yes.
And God, what was it? Bedroom, right?
Yep. First floor bedrooms.
Yep. It was secure area, first floor bedroom. And was it just you and me that were left?
Nope. Our other friend, Epic Samurai, was also with us as well.
Yeah. Yep. So it was 3-on-1, and it was we were defending and we were going against Montaigne, and it was secure area. Montaigne is got himself backed up in the corner behind the bed. So the walls reinforced and he was against like a brick wall, so you couldn't shoot from the outside. No one had impacts or anything, and it was just a stalemate. And then all of a sudden I got this idea, and I said to Icy Cat, I was like, in a second I'm gonna tell you to ping him. And then I just left the room and he's just like, okay. And I run upstairs, and I go into the office room.
Actually, it's like, right before the office room. It was the doorway threshold.
Yeah. So then I'm like, okay, ping him. And he pings him, and I'm standing right over him, and I shoot down and killed him. Yep. And just like that, that was the game.
Drilled the top of his head right through the floorboard. And it was one of those things from our perspective. Like you said, you're like, in a second, I'm going to tell you to ping him. And you gave no context or explanation as to why. And you ran out of the room. So Epic Samurai and I are sitting in the room. We're ADS'd on Monty just in case he drops a shield and tries to get a shot on us. We'll try to headshot him, but you know, he's not playing and we're just holding it. And you just go, ping him. I hit the ping, the little yellow thing pops up. Half a second later, Monty drops to the floor dead. And we're like, wait, what? And then we see on kill cam the most beautiful thing ever, where you're sitting above, and again, it's right on that doorway between office and that I forget the name of it, but the room in front of office where they have like the display cases.
Yeah.
And you're right over where that door is. The ping pops up and we see it on your kill cam. You fire through the floor, just happen to get it right in between the two cross beams and drill them through the top of the head. And we're like, that was the most MVP thing I have ever seen in my life. That was beautiful. Because it was like nobody had impact grenades. Nobody had a nitro cell. Monty wasn't budging. It's like, now what?
Yep. It was great. Honestly, that besides like, you know, the two aces that I have, I would definitely say that is my top one best strategic play that I've done for sure.
Definitely big brain.
And that doesn't happen very often.
So speaking of aces, my first ace I ever had was on house. And it was as Tachanka, and none of them were with the turret. I had set up the turret over kind of a top of stairs where the balcony overlooks that open area below. And so I was kind of set up there, and if anybody came through there, I'd get them, or if they crossed in front of the window trying to get into workshop, I'd get them or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I heard a window break in bathroom, and I had put up a wooden barricade on bathroom that went to the top of stairs, but okay. I knew that the bathroom was open that led into master bedroom. But I had put a barricade on master bedroom too. Basically, like if I'm going to sit on this turret, I'm going to hear somebody coming at me no matter what flank they take. Like, I'm pretty sure I even had a wooden barricade on kid's bedroom too. And so like, you know, nobody was just going to creep up on me, although I could have been hit from the clubhouse window or treehouse window. But so I hear the bathroom thing break, and I got off the turret. And just as I was like, maybe I ought to go through master bedroom, like go through my own barricade to meet whatever this threat is, I see the blitz shield punch through the master bedroom barricade.
Okay.
And I just start unloading on it with my SMG, and down goes Blitz. So I'm like, okay, cool. I run down the main stairs that are on the treehouse side, that little double back stairs that are over there by on the backside of kitchen. And as I run into living room, there's a guy in front of me that I mow down. And all of a sudden, as I take two steps forward from that, I start getting hit from the living room stairs, the L stairs in living room, because somebody was going to come up to deal with me taking out Blitz, but I had gone down the other set. So then I start shooting at them, but I run dry on ammo, switch to the pistol, pop him over there. And then I get both things reloaded, and the hatch to weight room below pool table was open. So I drop down there just in time to see a guy sprint past, like as I'm dropping down, I melee him. And then another guy comes like running around from, basement washroom area, and then I drill him with the SMG to get my first ace ever, and this is like years ago.
Yeah, but, for sure.
I mean, I will always remember it because it was the first ace I ever did. I've gotten aces since then, and I couldn't tell you play by play how they went, but that first one, I'll never forget it.
Yep, they're the most exciting. So I have only gotten two aces, so it's a little bit easier for me to remember both of them. And both of them were with Spetsnaz operators, and both of them happened to be on plane. So the first one was with Fuse, and we went through like front of plane. And I saw someone run into whatever that office in the very front is.
Meeting room?
Yes. So I throw my fuse charge on the door and I launch it and I kill two people immediately. And I'm like, what? This is awesome. And then I break down the door and people just start running at me and I just mow them down. And the last person, I think I had to like chase, like I had to run past someone who was like about to kill them and stole the kill to get the ace, but it was still an ace. My second one was on Rainbow is Magic. And I actually posted a video of this on the subreddit, but it was me and our friend Epic Samurai. I think we were actually like waiting for you and a couple other people to get on. We were just like shooting, killing time until other people got on. And we were in, I think it was the bedroom. And I was in that little side closet that is next to the stairwell.
It is literally just a little closet. That's all it is.
Yep. And I, you know, set up my turret there. I reinforced some stuff in the bedroom. And, you know, the match starts. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm not going to use the turret because no one ever does. And I'm just going to run around and kill people because I don't want to be like stuck. And immediately the three randoms that we have on our team die like within seconds of the match starting. And I was like,
they were probably doing a run out.
Yeah, probably. So I was like, okay, well, I guess I'll just get on this turret then, because, you know, it's me and Epic Samurai and he hasn't played in a while, so we're probably screwed now. So I'm just sitting there, and then all of a sudden one guy runs past me, runs into the objective. I just mow him down. I'm
with
like,
the turret.
Okay, that was with the turret. Yep. And then two more people run and mow them down. Another guy is coming in, starts shooting at me, and I knock him down, but he's down but not out. Epic Samurai takes a couple shots at him. I tell him to stop.
So I can get off my kill.
Yeah, pretty much. I was like, don't steal my kill, man. So I kill him. And then we don't know where the last guy is, and it happened to be Sledge. And then all of a sudden, I hear him breaking holes above objective. And I'm like, okay, Epic, start shooting your gun. You don't even have to hit him. Just shoot it to make noise so I can get up there. And he's like, okay. So he starts doing that, run around the corner, go upstairs, sneaking. And then all of a sudden, I see him, and I just kill him too.
Nice.
It was great.
The other two I have that kind of stick out to me, they were both shield ones. The first one I had, it was one of the first times I played with my son. And this is probably why it sticks out to me.
Yeah.
Because it was like a moment that was cool. And it was the first time he was playing with me together. And it was just a really neat one. But it was on Clubhouse. So we got into a situation where I was the last man standing on my team. And the other one was a Monty. Right. So, and it was secure area, I think, or was it bomb? I don't know. Regardless, I was the last one and Monty was the last one. And somebody had blown open a tunnel. And I knew that, I think I was in kitchen at the moment when it happened. So I knew that Monty was going to be able to run down the tunnel and secure.
Mm-hmm.
But because I knew he was in tunnel, I knew that they had to have breached it open. So that's not too far from where I was in kitchen. So I go running out the back door of kitchen. And, you know, so they get that, you know, hostile detected outside notification. So they know that I'm out there. So Monty, instead of going down the hallway or down the tunnel to expose his back to me, turns around to kind of deal with me. I see him extend his shield and he turtles up. So he's got his back in the corner, and one part of his back is against the hard metal wall, and the other part of his back is against the wooden one. So the like there's two breachable walls there, right? One is on the very end facing outward, and the other breachable wall faces the side of it. So the one that they had blown open was the one that faced the side. So his wall was against the hard metal wall behind him, and then the one on the end, that was the breachable one. So I'm thinking to myself, and I had somebody that had a shotgun and a SMG. So Might that have been Mira? I don't remember. It was somebody that had a secondary shotgun, though.
For sure.
So I decided to bait because the Monty is going to turn and follow wherever they think the threat is coming from. So I kind of like I do a lean and I sort of pop in some shots toward the breached hole on the side one there to kind of like draw him to turn to rotate a little bit more to face that threat. And then I quickly lean the other way, swap to the SMG, strafe fire into the leftmost side of that soft breachable wall, drilling him right in the back and he goes down. And then nice. I'm able to run in there and finish him off. And it was just so fun to do that because yeah. I used my map knowledge against the Monty to go, okay, you're going to turn to face the threat this way, but I know you're exposed with the soft wall on that side and I'm going to use it against you.
Uh-huh.
And that one, again, just sticks out because that was the first time I played with my son and he got to watch that and it was just very cool.
Yeah, for sure.
The other time I remember a shield one, and this kind of gets into like sometimes you just like get a rush that just overcomes you and it's just like this solid adrenaline that just fills through you and you get such a high from playing it. But I was in Clubhouse on Garage, secure area.
Okay.
And I'm on the walkway above, right? And Blitz, so I'm the last person, Blitz is the last person. And you guys are all on mic. And I remember Blitz came in the door underneath me. So yeah. That would be the, not the door from the outside kennels, but the other door. And so he's coming in there, I'm on the walkway, and it's one of these stalemate situations. I know he's directly underneath me because the camera can see him, right?
Yep.
So I know that's where he is. You guys were giving me that info. He knows I'm up on the walkway somewhere. He doesn't know exactly where, but, you know, it's that L-shaped walkway. He knows I'm up there somewhere. So he's holding position. I'm holding position. It's a secure area, so nothing will happen until somebody does something. And so he gets sick of being spotted. He switches and shoots out the camera. But I know his position. He hasn't moved at all. So I'm like directly over where he has to be when he comes in. And I'm listening. I'm hearing like the little shuffle steps he's making as he like shuffles forward just a little bit, just a little bit, just a little bit. And then I time it just right so that he takes some pot shots up at the balcony. He doesn't know like which iron plates I'm behind, you know, because there's like three or four sections of iron plates that you can hide behind.
Yeah.
And so he takes a few pot shots at some, few at another. And I wait until I hear the reload noises below me. I hop the rail. I land on his head as I'm meleeing from above. Like I just land on him with that melee strike and take him out during his reload. And like, just the rush. I mean, like everybody on mic was like, yeah, you know, and I was just, it felt so amazingly fun to use the sound to know when he was in that reload cycle and then just like literally land on him like Super Mario on top of a Goomba and just boom, take him out like that. It was so cool.
That was awesome for sure. So let's quick go to our pro tip. So today I'm going to talk about defending barbecue in Skyscraper from Geisha with Alibi. So this has been one that I've been doing for a while, and it has been very, very effective. I actually posted a clip of me doing this also on our subreddit. So you save one of your reinforcements for the southeast wall in Geisha, and that's the one that connects from the outside deck into Geisha on the second floor. I like to use the Bailiff 410 as my secondary weapon, and I like impact grenades because it just makes it makes this situation a lot easier.
Gives you rotation options too.
Yep, a lot of rotation options. So I use my last reinforcement on the wall closest to the window and objective to kind of protect people from opening up that kitchen wall and being able to shoot in, because I use the impact grenades to kind of open the rest of that wall up to make it easier to kind of see into the building. So after I do that, I usually throw an alibi down kind of by the wall that I reinforce just to, you know, give it a trap. And then I immediately run up into Geisha. And that's when I reinforce that wall and then I blow the trap door open with the bailiff. And then in doing so, it opens up basically the entire like main area of barbecue. So you can see that. And if you do it correctly, you can also see the east door of barbecue. So you can see people coming in from that door, and you can also see kind of like the main area.
And I should throw in there too that this is a strat that's comboed when I do a maestro play on there where I take maestro's shotgun and I just shred that wall that connects kitchen and barbecue. So I shred the center of that wall so that way they can't, if they get in, they can't run through into kitchen and they can't vault it either because it's just a strip across the center. But you can see into barbecue from the geisha position because that wall, the middle of the wall has been removed all along its length.
Yep. Yeah, and that makes it really awesome because that gives you, really good overwatch for defense. But also, in addition to that, it kind of helps you lock down the entire kitchen. So, you know, with that trapdoor open, you can also see someone coming in from the west wall. Like if they use thermite or I know a lot of people like to use Maverick and get kind of like peek holes there. Or Habana, you can see the south window in the kitchen. All you have to do is kind of just use the bailiff and shoot some of those wooden planks that are holding up the pots, and you have a direct line of sight, and they can't actually see up very well into that. So that makes it really good. And then you can also see both east and northeast doors in the kitchen. So you kind of have that entire section on lockdown.
Right.
It makes it really, because a lot of times people don't necessarily stay in barbecue. They stay close to it because it's kind of just like a death trap if you stay in that building or in that room. So it kind of like opens it up so you can block off an entire chunk of entryway and then also have overwatch. And if someone does come in, they're not usually looking up into that trap door and they're usually looking at the other two doors. So they, you know, strafe by and they're not even looking at you, and you can take them out pretty easily.
Another thing I like to do to try to help your position when you're over there is, so there's those stairs right outside of Geisha that come down into it's kind of like the bar restaurant area, the bigger area. And when you come down those stairs, of course, you will face the door that leads into barbecue. But there's also the door that comes out of kitchen that's there 90 degrees to your position. But what I like to do is I like to blow out the top third of that wall. And what that does, so you were talking about that west wall on kitchen that goes out to the balcony. You like to have a Maverick or a Thermite or a Hibana that will breach that wall oftentimes. And so by taking out the top third of that soft wall that the stairs overlook, what you can do is you can actually hit that wall if they breach it, the further west wall, because this wall is directly to the east of that wall. So from stairs, you can sit on stairs and you can kind of go left and right on the stairs to change your elevation as needed. But now you can shoot over the top of that wall onto that outer west wall position from there. So if you're in Geisha and you get driven out of that room for any reason, or you need a better angle than what you have, that gives you another rotation option. And even if I don't do that for you, you can also take that out with the bailiff, the top third
with
of that
bailiff,
wall.
Yep.
So it's a strong position to counter any pushes from.
Absolutely. And then with your two other alibis, you can kind of do whatever makes sense for you. But for me, I usually like to have one kind of in one of the corners of the trap door. And that way, you know, if I start getting these kills, people are going to see that and immediately just shoot at it. And it kind of gives their position away for other people too. And then I usually like to save the last one in case someone does run in. I can fire some shots and then I can throw that in to kind of distract them. And then all of a sudden I get down there. So that's what I would say. That's the pro tip for this week.
Okay.
It's a fun one. You know, I wouldn't necessarily call it a pro strat, but it definitely it's not going to be on pro league, but it'll get you some kills.
For sure.
I'll put it that way. So let's drop down into our Q&A for this week. Our first question is from Papa Fluffy. And he was listening to the Logic Bomb podcast the other day, and they were talking about reworking Blackbeard because he was frustrating to both play and play against. What do you guys think? And should they generally rework operators because they are frustrating? And go.
I don't know that you should make it a policy to rework operators because they're frustrating, but I think that you can. I don't think it should be like, well, this operator is frustrating, so we will.
Right.
But there's certain ones like maybe Clash or Blackbeard that are frustrating to the point of, yeah, maybe we should do a little something about this. Blackbeard's a tough one. I mean, when he first came out, his shield had like 600 hit points. It was ridiculous. Right. Like, yep. It could be broken, but the circumstances which led to it being able to be broken just, like, were insane. Yep. So then they gave him two shields but made them 120 hit points each, and now they're 60 hit points each, I believe, right?
Yep, I think
And people joke that his shields are made out of saran wrap at this point.
Yep.
So he went from being, like, insanely overpowered to just, like, you know, ping, oh, broke the shield. Yeah. And it's an argument that will be that some people will still say no matter what you do to Blackbeard, even if it saves one bullet from going through, he's still overpowered. Because if that one shot was a headshot and you survived it, now that's overpowered. I don't know that I have that exact same way of looking at it.
For sure.
I kind of liked where he was at a little better when he had the two shields of 120 health as opposed to the 60 health.
Yep.
I don't know. I feel like... I just don't like what his gadget is at all. Yeah. I would almost like to see any rework that's done for Blackbeard just completely go in a brand new direction.
Different direction.
Like what they're doing with Tachanka. It's just like, yeah. Okay, this just wasn't working as like completely new. I'd almost like to see that for Blackbeard.
I hear that.
Stepping away from his gadget and looking at his guns, I would like to see the Scar maybe get a 30 round mag instead of a 20. I like his DMR,
mm-hmm.
but I think the Scar could probably use a 30 round mag.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I don't know. I don't play Blackbeard a lot. I definitely get annoyed when I break his shield, but not his face. Just like everyone else. But I've never gotten to the point where I felt like it was too overpowered. I mean, back in the day, in the very beginning, it definitely was. But like nowadays, I'm not like freaking out if there's a Blackbeard on offense. But I will say that I think he could use a 30 round mag too. I think that would be nice. It's a little annoying the speed of having to reload with that. But
I would also like to see for both he and Valkyrie a second mm-hmm. pistol option. The Desert Eagle can be good, but it's not a tool I would like to apply to every situation where I have a sidearm.
Yeah, I hear that 100%. But I think the second part of this question, should they generally rework operators because they're frustrating? No, I disagree 100%. I feel like it forces you to rethink certain strategies and come up with new ideas on attacking an operator, whether it be offense or defense. Coming up with new ways of dealing with Jackal or something like that. I don't think that because he's a frustrating operator to play against that he needs to be fixed. Or like Clash. Like I hate playing against Clash. I always get frustrated, but I don't think that because of that, Clash needs a rework. I think Clash needs a rework because she's broken and people find ways to like exploit glitches. You know, Blackbeard is definitely a frustrating operator to play against, but I don't think he needs to be reworked because he's frustrating. I think they just need to kind of balance a couple things out.
Yeah, I agree with that too. I mean, like, for instance, Kavera can be a frustrating operator to play against. The amount of times where she'll take somebody out and go for the interrogation and you just want to scream in frustration because, you know, her silent step, you never heard her coming, or, you know, getting, you know, three shot downed with a pistol or whatever can be frustrating. But I don't feel like she needs to be reworked at all.
Exactly.
Even though she can be insanely frustrating sometimes. Yep. Clash, I'm there with you, but I'm going to say that she actually is not beyond just the fact that she can be glitched in such a way that her pistol can fire through her shield and make her invincible while she's firing. The way her ability works is fundamentally broken. I think one of our listeners, SC Spider, had pointed out that, like, he was a situation where he was a Montaigne and they were both turtled up behind their shields. He can do nothing and she can just zap, zap, zap-a-roo until he's dead.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, that's a frustration that I think is valid to look at and go, I don't know if that's, you know, there just seems to be something about that, yes, it's frustrating, but it's also, like, broken in a way that it goes, you know, like, why can you be a Monty that can cause damage? You're invulnerable and you can still cause damage, you know, kind of a
right
thing. So, I don't know.
Touche.
Fair enough. Our second question today comes from Mozzie Is My Boy, and he wants to know, he says he doesn't know if this question is a question that counts, but when he's playing a ranked game and some of his friends are trolling, how should I deal with this? Because I've gone down 3 ranks because of people team killing, kill themselves, don't listen, and are toxic in chat, etc. It gets really annoying. Should I stop playing ranked, or should I deal with this another way? And I feel like this is a really good question to ask, because a lot of us probably have people we play with where we can relate to this, where it's like you're trying to play the game, you know, somewhat seriously. You know, I mean, you didn't even have to be playing it sweaty or anything, but, you know, you're just like, yeah, you know, you want to win, or you want to, you know, do well or whatever. And the people you're playing with are just screwing around. And that can be super frustrating. How do you deal with this? Well, it depends on the relationship you have with the people. You know,
right.
Maybe these are the kind of people that you can have a conversation with and just say, hey, we need to, you know, maybe talk about this dynamic a little bit. So when we're playing, can we, like, maybe not mess around so much? Can we actually, like, try to go for the wins? And, like, I understand that that's fun, but can we maybe keep that to in between matches in the lobby? You know, but when we're playing, you know, or whatever, if these are people that are like, you just don't think that they're going to care, then, you know, maybe it is something where you look at like, okay, these are my casual friends, but if I'm really wanting to go after some rank wins, maybe these aren't the guys I play ranked with, you know, so maybe I build up another group of friends to play ranked with when I'm doing that. And if those friends are noticing that and you point that out to them and be like, hey, look, I love playing with you guys, but because you guys do nothing but troll, like, I don't want to do that when I'm ranked, so I'll play casual with you, but I don't want to go into rank like that. That might even be a wake-up call in and of itself, where they might be like, oh, well, we don't want that, so okay, in ranked we'll play serious or something. You know what I mean? So it's a tough one. It really depends on the dynamics and how much of a relationship you have with those people. But
absolutely,
that would be my advice.
I mean, you know, we've said this from the beginning, you know, the importance of communication is more than just playing the game. You know, with your squad, it's like, you know, you have to be able to communicate how you're feeling about certain situations or it's not going to change. And, you know, Even Isocat and I, we have a larger group of friends that we play with, and some people take the game a little bit more seriously than others. And, you know, sometimes we have to be like, hey, you know, just stop talking, or let's focus, let's, you know, get back to it. And we've been fortunate enough to create a large enough friend group that 9 times out of 10 people are receive that message and, you know, are able to change the way things are going. But it also, you know, we when we play casual, we play a little bit more loosey-goosey cash. And, you know, when we play ranked, we all kind of get down and focus a little bit more. So it's definitely one of those things that you should talk to them about it. And if they aren't receiving that message, it probably might be time to find some new people to play ranked with. Cause I, you know, some people really care about their rank. other people don't. And you know, it's painfully obvious when you're, you know, playing a ranked game and the entire team is team killing except for like two people. And like at being the team going against that, like I feel bad for those two people that are actually trying and everyone else is goofing around. So, you know, it's communication is key.
Yeah. And, you know, that is an interesting thing you point out, too, because we are sometimes on the receiving end of that, of witnessing the other team self-destruct under trolling. And not only do we feel sorry for like whoever is on the other team that isn't participating in that and they're kind of left behind, but also it's fundamentally unfun to play against. Like, I do not want a victory, even if it's ranked. I don't want a win just handed to me because the other team self-destructed under trolling.
Yeah.
You know, that just feels crappy.
Yeah.
Like it's I didn't earn this. Win.
Exactly. Exactly. So yeah, we definitely sympathize with you on that one.
Okay. Well, we've talked about, I think, a wide variety of things, considering that this has been a bit of an off week and that there's been no news and information. But hopefully you've gotten a little bit more insight into Captain and I and how we play and what we're passionate about and some of our experiences in the game that we've opened up and shared a little bit more of some of that personal stuff. Also, on another personal note, I just wanted to give a real brief shout out to a buddy of mine, Noiser, who listens to us from over in Sweden, says he catches the podcast on the regular. And I really enjoy hearing when people from around the world kind of listen and just let us know that, you know, it's not just somebody here in the United States where we are, but that we're reaching people outside in that larger area. And Noiser is actually a good friend of mine. He's invited me out to Sweden actually once before several years ago, and he's pretty active in the game community. He works with Bikini Body a lot right now, and so just, you know, heard from him just the other week, and he said that he was listening to the podcast, so give him that nice big shout out. And always cool to hear people that are involved in the actual gaming industry that are, you know, like kind of listening in on things and just, you know, appreciate what we're putting together. So hey to everybody out there that's part of that world. Thanks for joining
us.
So next week, we're going to have a lot of interesting things to talk about. We do have some news and information that should be ready to be discussed in next week's episode. And I can't wait for you guys to be a part of that. If you haven't in the meantime already, please go ahead and visit us over on the Rainbow Six Radio subreddit. Be part of the gaming community we are building over there. Share a gameplay clip. Just post a question. You know, talk to us over there. We're more than happy to answer and dialogue with you. You can also find us over on Twitter. I am IcyCat25 on Twitter, or you can find Cap Dan's Ghost. That's like Cap Can, but Cap Dan. Cap Dan's Ghost over on Twitter. And you can find me on YouTube and Facebook at IcyCat25 as well. So until next time, we will catch you guys later.
This has been Rainbow Six Radio. Be sure to tune in next time for even more Rainbow Six talk, news, and information.